Today on our Tech for Business podcast, this is the beginning of our Cybersecurity Awareness Month. We're joined by Nate, our Director of Cybersecurity, and we're going back to the basics, the building blocks, and we're starting with MFA. So Nate, for someone who maybe has never heard this before, what is MFA? And then if you have any examples of how I might experience that in my everyday life.
So multi-factor is multi-factor authentication. You may have heard this as two-factor authentication. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you'll hear this, but really the premise of it is that passwords just aren't enough these days, or I'd even go as far to say that it's antiquated technology, right? Not even technology. Passwords have been around for thousands of years, right? To get into the castle gate of your civilization, you had to know the secret passphrase, the king is the best, or whatever it was, right? And if someone didn't know that passphrase, throw them into the moat. So what we've done is we've just historically just assumed that if you knew whatever a passphrase or passcode was, that you should be trusted. That is no longer really the case, because we know that with technology and just simple human psychology, people may be deceived. And so what we see are threat actors that will say, this is your IT team. This is your HR team, right? You know, log in here to do your new benefits enrollment, or this is your IT, your mailbox is almost full. Click here to review, you know, files that may be taking up extra space. And so through the deception, people will give up what we have assumed to be that trusted token into that application. And so organizations have said enough is enough, because the impact is too great through these simple mistakes. And so what we're doing now is we're putting in multi-factor or two-factor, two forms of authentication that says, in order to get access to these, you need to know the password, but you also need some other form of identity or authorization to say, you need two forms of validation that it is who you say you are. Because if we know that you have your passphrase, an attacker probably doesn't have your cell phone, a hardware token, something along those lines. And we can get into that in a bit. But that's why we see multi-factor being prevalent today.
Can you give us some more examples of MFA other than just like my password, and then I'm thinking about my phone, like my thumbprint? What are other forms that someone might experience?
Yeah. So there's, in the identity conversations, there's usually a couple different things. It's, is there something that you know, which again is the passwords, or, you know, the PIN code or whatever, you know, for the fence gate. So it's something that you know, something that you have. So this could be your phone. It could be, I have my keychain right next to me. So for those that are just listening, I've got a whole set of different YubiKeys. These are little hardware tokens that plug into a device. And so this is something that no remote person has, because it's on my car keys. Or we get into something that you are. And so this could be biometrics, such as your iris scans, your face, you know, with the phones is your face ID. So your face structure and the depth of it, your fingerprints. In certain high level security instances, it might be the gait of your walk, right? Is how do you walk? What's the intonation of your voice? So in order to get into the trusted document room, you need to walk down this hallway, and it will measure to see, is this person walking like they always have been in the past, right? So yes, it ties back to something you know, something you are, or something you have.
What if that person like hurts their ankle over the weekend? Do they have to update their IT department that their gait is different?
Probably, right? You know, it's, you know, hey, I can't access to the server room. Here's my doctor's note that said that my leg was amputated this weekend or something,
yeah.
right?
Oh my gosh, crazy. Well, I feel like you already answered my question about MFA being this improved security beyond password. I mean, can you go a little bit more into what are risks of not implementing this? I mean, I think sometimes people feel that if they're going to get in, they're going to get in. So how does MFA sort of play a role in that security?
Yeah. And I want to just play off of your, if they're going to get in, they're going to get in. That's coming from such a topic of defeat, right?
Yeah.
Is, and we see this with privacy conversations all the time is, well, they already have it. Why should I care? Right. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, yeah, they're going to get in at some point. It's probably going to cause thousands of dollars of damage. Who cares? Right. You know, is, we should be invested in protecting ourselves, right? We do this with our homes. When we go to bed, we lock the door. When we, if you're in the city, you probably lock your car door, you know, when you're out and about. I have family that grew up out in the country and that wasn't a thing, right? We're just trusting individuals. But when it comes to the impacts of it, it can be astronomical and cause millions of dollars of damage. And we see this all the time. If you look at any of the news cycles in the last 10 years, right, is someone gets in to hypothetically, let's just say your email, right? You say, I don't really have any data, right? You know, I'm not processing credit card info. I'm not processing health info. I'm not an executive. So I probably don't have that intellectual, you know, knowledge of, you know, intellectual property or anything like that. But you have contacts to those that do in your organization. And so if someone is in your mailbox, what they can start doing is building a footprint of what your organization looks like to either set up for future attacks. Maybe you have in the past, let's say you were working on your W-2 for work, right? And you said, well, I needed to send that to my personal email address. Sent. Well, someone can see that. So now your social security number is likely sitting in someone else's hands. Or maybe you have a good relationship with your CFO. What if the CFO is deceived? Because we already have established that people can be deceived pretty easily. What if you said, hey, I want to change my payroll data on the next payroll. Can you change it to this bank account? All of a sudden, you don't get your paycheck. The CFO has now sent your payroll to a threat actor somewhere else. So it actually does impact you. And it could be something minor. Like, again, I don't have any other sensitive info, but it's people can be creative on how they exploit it. One of the common ways that we also see are we've seen organizations that get compromised. And they'd had elevated permissions within like Office 365. Well, that threat actor will get into maybe the Azure environment, spin up new servers to set up their own new mail relay servers and just blast out more spam to use to attack the next people. And so you are just the jumping bridge to that. But how do they pay for all the servers to spin it up? It was on your corporate credit card and your corporate account because it's your server instance. And so you might just be the hopping point so that way they don't have to pay for the next thing. let's just keep going with a couple more examples that we've helped organizations with. VPNs, they're prevalent. If you have one, get rid of it. We already have broadcasts and blogs and podcasts about getting rid of your VPNs. Because what we see is VPN after VPN after VPN compromise, because usually it only requires your password. People wised up and insurance wised up and said, now you need multi-factor. And you know what people do? They go, I'm not actively logging in. I'm sitting here enjoying my coffee this morning. You know, my phone is blasting me with notifications saying, are you trying to sign into the VPN? They go, it's getting really annoying because I'm trying to sit here and scroll Reddit or Facebook. Yes, it's me. Go away. And they let someone into the corporate network. I've seen it time and time again. And all of a sudden, now you have someone in your internal network potentially wreaking havoc. So there's a lot of creative uses that people can use to compromise it. So multi-factor, is it enough? No, but it's better than not having it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. People are often still the ones that sometimes circumvent their own security controls. So.
Yeah. So, you know, you've convinced me MFA is a thing that we need, but now I'm at this point of implementing it. And I mean, the first thought is in a business, especially, or even in your personal life, how much user friction is there? How much pushback is there going to be now having multiple pieces you're going to have to use to get into something? What does that sort of look like?
Yeah, culture change is by far the biggest challenge of implementing these, but it can be approached with a couple different ways to make it successful. So anytime that you are saying, well, now I need to potentially slow you down in terms of logging into things, well, evaluate how often is this person actually logging into it? If I do implement multi-factor, are they actually going to be prompted that frequently for it? So one of the most common things I hear when implementing it is surrounding email. So let's, you know, pick your email provider. I'll just pick on Office 365 because most people have it. Is if I put multi-factor on Office 365, am I going to be prompted for multi-factor every time I open up Outlook on my desktop, on my phone? Because that's going to get really annoying and cumbersome. The answer is no, because Microsoft already knows that they had to do some type of compromise and, you know, put the controls in place to say on a brand new device or a brand new location that you've never been in, require multi-factor. Once you're in, Microsoft on the back end is refreshing kind of a token that says this is still known to be good. Nothing has changed. So just keep giving them access to it. As soon as a password changes, it breaks that token. You go back to the new logon with the new password, your multi-factor, and you're logged back in. And then it gets back to the refresh token again for, let's say, you know, well, whatever your password policy is, right? So unless you're actively logging into all these new devices all the time, it's probably not going to really ever get in your way. VPNs can be quite cumbersome as your internet drops in and out. So just get rid of the VPN, like I said, right? One of the biggest challenges, though, again, coming to culture, is going to be identifying what the culture looks like. So if your executives are not on board and they're trying to circumvent the tool themselves, you're probably going to not get much adoption, right? If you can't lead with confidence and by example, how can you expect those behind you to do the same? When it comes to the more culture is, do you have things such as unions in your environment? So unions, right, there's other stipulations that you have to take into consideration, such as, do these employees have, you know, corporate cell phones? Am I giving them some type of stipend to put corporate resources on that device? And you can kind of work through that. If having those types of users, that you're not able to put any type of software on the devices, you can take a look at hardware devices. So I kind of called out my YubiKeys earlier, but there's other types of hardware solutions out there then that they can carry around. And again, as long as you provide those, you should be able to meet all of the contractual obligations that you might have with, you know, unions. The other portion of user friction is sometimes you can start small and start working into a full adoption. So rather than just sweeping through and saying multi-factor is enabled on everything, maybe you start with the most critical applications. Let's, you know, Office 365 is public facing. Let's lock that one down first, right? Then we know that we have the VPNs. Get rid of them or put that next, right? And then from there, you can start working at some of the less critical applications. So I think the last thing I wanted to say about this is communicating as the business risk, right? Is I understand, and, you know, providing that empathy is I understand it may be a bit more inconvenient on a day-to-day to be able to log in the morning. However, the implications of us not doing so could potentially bring down the business, you know, let's say it's going to take the business down for 2 weeks, right? We know that the average ransomware downtime is 2 weeks. And so I also just saw another statistic. I'm not going to link it or anything because I don't remember where. So take this one with a grain of salt. There's a recent study done that's, I think it was more in the European Union, that said of 500 different security incidents, 30% of them resulted in some type of employee layoff, right? Whether or not it's those that were responsible for the lack of controls or too much of a revenue hit to the business, so they had to make financial changes to ensure that it still remains profitable. So being able to communicate those risks is, yes, it's a little inconvenient, but if we don't do it, there's major implications and up to potential termination of you because we can't afford you because we just had a major security incident.
Right? Yeah. Interesting. So, I mean, are there any limitations to MFA? Like it, after you've got it all set up, where's kind of the border when it comes to MFA?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's going to be a bit of a fragmented approach. Is sometimes applications will say, we will integrate with your existing MFA solution. So I'll go pick on Okta and Duo, and, you know, Microsoft Authenticator has one, is, you know, bring your solution, you know, BYOP, bring your own phone or something, and link it to there so you have one multi-factor. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. And we see websites say, go scan this QR code, go scan that QR code. Sometimes it's a text message. Sometimes it's a phone call. Unfortunately, sometimes they still send it to your email, right? And you have to go get a code from your email. So I wish that we can move to more of a consolidated approach across the board. So the user experience isn't as good as it could be today. One of the other limitations is offline access. So a lot of the ones where you scan a QR code and then you get like a rolling six digits, it works great, right? Those work offline. The problem is when it requires like a push notification to your device or a phone call. What if you're in the basement of a concrete building? What if you're out in, we've had customers that are out in the middle of a farm field working on something and they needed to get multi-factor. Well, there's no phone calls, there's no internet out in the middle of a farm field. So you have to take those into consideration as well. Or on a plane, right? Unless you've paid for the in-flight Wi-Fi, you actually get your multi-factor.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about that. But yeah, that offline issue or hurdle is interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm interested, you know, you've got the buy-in, I'm going to use MFA, all these things. Is MFA like customizable for businesses, like, or is it kind of the same across the board when you're talking about healthcare or finance or just a small business? Is it the same for everybody or can it be different depending on your needs or your compliance?
It can absolutely differ. So at the core, we'll say it's still the same, right? Mm-hmm. Something you know, something you have, or something you are, we're still going to address that foundational component. Mm-hmm. Now, what the implementation of it looks like might differ. So some of us might say we want to be prompted every time we log in. Sometimes the providers will say, once a session is established, maybe prompt only once a day. And if you go idle, right, you know, let's say a lunch break, you're away from your computer, the screen's not moving. If you're idle for an hour or two, well, kill the session and re-prompt again, because you might be a new person. We can implement things such as that. In terms of the, and I'm trying to hold off because I know there's a portion that I want to talk about a little bit later about identity. But in terms of like the offline access modes, those can differ. What frequency or where the multi-factor is configured on which applications can differ. Sometimes you can even do time-based things. So if you're working from 9 to 5 and inside an office location, maybe don't prompt. But if you're, you know, outside of those times, then prompt. What we've also seen in some of the more premium solutions are things such as impossible travel. So if I see you logging in California and all of a sudden you're logging in Boston, prompt for that, even though you're within the same United States, don't trust it because it was impossible for that person to fly that quickly across the country. So those are considerations. And then as I'm talking about it, we're getting closer to the identity, is now you can start implementing things such as device trust and certificates and going full passwordless, which is phenomenal, by the way, if you've ever implemented that. So
I was going to say, maybe just go into identity. I know we've kind of gone through everything MFA, and to finish up is sort of like, what's next?
Yeah. There's a whole podcast about that if you want to go back. So I'll give you the high level of it, is identity and access management is something close to my heart, but it's a broad topic when it comes to the security discussions. Multi-factor is one component to that. And so when you start thinking about identity and access management, you're talking about the entire life cycle of the user access and their just provisioning experience. So I think on the past podcast, I call this as the intersection between HR, IT, and security. One of my employees taught me that, so I'm not going to take credit for it, but I thought it was a wonderful illustration of the importance of that broader discussion. Is it's tied into process, it's tied into procedures, it's tied into the technical controls, it's tied into, again, the user experience, to say, when an employee starts, are we able to like pre-provision the account ahead of time with all the proper permissions that they might need on day one? That employee comes in on day one, maybe you want them to go through security training before actually getting access to the tools, so you can build automation around that. And then when an employee is terminated, what if IT is not available, right? And only HR is. IT never goes on vacation, so they're always available, right?
Yeah.
But what if it's an IT professional that you need to terminate? With some of that identity and access management and the automation that you can start to build in that, is maybe your core directory, whether it's something like Active Directory, Okta, Azure AD, you name it, is linked to your HR system, such as Workday, UltiPro, ADP, you name it. And as soon as HR terminates them, it flows downstream and severs access to all the other applications. That's the power of identity. And when we tie that back into the business risk is, you know that as soon as that employee is terminated, they've lost access to the doors, all the critical applications, they can't get onto their device anymore. And it was all done within 10 seconds, right?
Yeah.
It's very, very powerful stuff.
I mean, like you said, we've got plenty of podcasts and blog posts. And I'll link them all in the description. Thank you so much, Nate, for joining us today. And we'll be back next week with an all new episode.
If you enjoyed this topic, please let us know. Like, subscribe, or reach out to us at info@cit-net.com or head out to our website, cit-net.com/podcast. We'll be back next week with an all new episode.